I'm Shalina Tobin, and today I'm joined by Tom Booton, the youngest chef ever to be given the reins at the Grill at the Dorchester Hotel in London. From his hometown of Colchester in Essex, he travelled the world refining his craft and is now set to shake things up right here in the capital. Welcome, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thank you very much for having me, firstly.
Well,
yeah,
thank you for
I'm
your
doing
time.
Good. No worries.
Really appreciate it. So how's it going since you've been open since lockdown? I know you kicked off the Dorchester rooftop pop-up, which was a genius idea, whoever came up with that. It was brilliant. How did that go for you?
Yeah, it was good. But it was kind of mine and my F&B director's idea, because it was a beautiful sight up there. So he said, why don't we do something? So I had it all nice and easy in my head. We would do 40 for lunch, 40 for dinner. And then I went on Saturday Kitchen and spoke about it, and we ended up doing about 220 to 250 every day, just all day dining. So it was most probably the hardest 13 days. But no, it was really good because everyone was just so buzzing to be outside and being
Absolutely.
Back in restaurants.
Yeah, so and you've
really
got
nice.
live music up there, which is brilliant. And I came as well. Absolutely loved it. It was very
difficult.
It was
difficult a chilly night.
Reservation. Yes, it was freezing. It was very, very windy.
The one thing we couldn't control was the weather. A few people shouted at me about it, but
but it was, you know, it was just like you said, so good to be out and really nice to see, you know, buzzy atmosphere, and the food was spectacular.
No, it was good. It was hard because we were cooking out of a bedroom theoretically, so it was quite full on. So yeah, my team did amazingly doing it. It was 13 days of non-stop all day dining, which we're not used to, but yeah. And since that as well, we've reopened the restaurant now, so we had really, really busy 6 weeks, busiest we've ever been, to be honest, which is great, fantastic. We're doing loads of little side projects as well. And then yeah, I think this week it's kind of, we're still busy today, but I don't know, I think it's London's calmed down a little bit again, which is quite, I feel like my head's above water again. We just had 6 weeks of really pushing
madness. Yeah, I think you're right. You know, things are calming down a little bit, just purely because I think that whole rush is now over. People are just kind of starting relaxing.
Yeah, definitely. No, but it was amazing. The team absolutely smashed it, and it's so good to be busy. And it's so good to be back at work, you know. All of us have had a really rough year and a half.
Mm.
So to be back doing what we've missed doing was a wake-up call. It's definitely a slap round the face, but no, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. So it's good.
Yeah, absolutely. We wouldn't want you anywhere else. So, Tom, you were just 15 when you started out in the industry in Essex. Did you know that at that point you wanted to be a chef, or did you just was it just a job just for job's sake? Tell us about your beginning.
Yeah, I don't know really. I think I don't know why, but I started cooking some brownies out of some, I can't remember the guy's name. It's quite a young guy back then. It was Sam Smith, but that's the singer, isn't it? You know, there's this guy who you had this brownie recipe, and I'd made it a few times. And when you get sent to work experience, I remember all of my best mates, we were in an IT class and all of our mums were there, and they were like, where do you want to go? Like slapping us around. Where do you want to go work experience? None of us had a clue. You know, we were all more interested in kicking a football around and trying to get into trouble. And then my mum said, well, if you like cooking, there's a really good restaurant about 10, 15 minutes away, which I never heard of, called the Toll Booth. Which now I understand is quite famous. It's been there for must be nearly 70 years now. Used to have a Michelin star. One of the Rue cousins used to work there, if I remember right. So
right.
She said, if you're going to do it, do it. So yeah, I did 2 weeks work experience, kind of fell in love with it. You know, I think you just had that camaraderie, like with all the team, with all the boys and girls in the kitchen. And then the executive chef Ian said, well, if you like it, come and work weekends. So I used to do Friday nights after school, Saturday, Sundays, and then
go back
to school on a Monday and just sleep all day, really.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had a paper round as well, Monday to Friday. So I was most probably pretty rich. living at home rent free.
And so talk to us about your culinary influences while growing up. Was your mum a great cook? Did you cook with her? She obviously knew what was good for you, right?
Maybe, yeah. Well, I'm from Colchester, Essex, so I definitely was a little bit cocky at school. So still am, to be honest, most people would say, but not in a bad way. But I think the kitchen sorts you out a little bit. It's like the army, isn't it? You know, not that I was naughty at school, but I used to find myself in a little, I don't know, I used to love back chatting, I guess. But no, and then it was good. Yeah, and then I can't remember the question, sorry.
Oh. it was just what your culinary influences were, and if you were cooking with your mum when you were growing up.
I'm not allowed to bitch about my mum anymore because I went on Saturday Kitchen and told the whole nation that my mum was a terrible cook.
So she's, I heard that.
So she's not really happy with me, to be honest. But yeah, she was an amazing cook and she taught me everything I know.
Including those brownies.
Yeah, including them brownies. No, we didn't really grow up with food. I don't know, really. Like, we never ate fish. My mum said at school they prepped a fish one time. She hated fish bones. So I don't think I ever tried a bit of fish until I was most probably at the toll booth, so 15, 16.
Wow.
Most probably. And then, yeah, I don't know, but my dad's got an allotment now and my dad's really into like growing his own vegetables and
amazing.
They do cook a lot better now, to be honest. But they were both working really when me and my brother were kids. Mm. My mum was a full-time nurse. My dad was working for the army. So these guys, they were working, you know, we did Christmas dinners. Mum was always at work. So we never really spent Christmas with her.
Right. Well, it sounds
we did later on. But
it sounds but like you're the one doing the influencing now. Your dad's got an allotment and enjoys that kind of thing. It's kind of gone the other way around, which is quite...
Yeah, maybe. He loves his allotment. To be honest, it must probably be quite nice. Retire, get a nice allotment.
Yeah. And have you seen it? What do you think about the kind of produce he's growing?
Yeah, good, yeah. They always go through this mad... I don't know, when people start home growing, they always grow marrows. And I don't know about you, but I think marrows are like one of the worst vegetables. It's not terrible, but it's no courgette, is it? It's just big and spongy. And yeah. Dad used to come home with these big marrows and be like, look at this marrow, and you'd eat it, and you'd be like, nah.
So it doesn't have Tom's stamp of approval then?
No, but now he grows some really beautiful stuff, actually. Whenever he comes up to London, he brings us a little box of goodies.
Oh, nice. You know,
it's good, yeah.
So you had a very promising start to your career, and as I said earlier, just started at 15, you won Chef of the Future through Food and Drink Awards.
Yeah, no, that was good. Yeah, at the toll booth, my chef Ian put me in for it, and it was just kind of, yeah, it was good. I think he kicked me up the bum to make sure that I won it, so that was a good night. It was nice. I suppose that kind of, even though it's a local kind of award, but it does kind of fling you into it thinking, oh, maybe you can do this, because still at the time I didn't know, when you leave school I didn't know what I was going to do. It wasn't until Ian sat me down and said, look, come and work here full time. I'll pay you 10 grand a year. It was,
and you were like, wow.
I was like, wow, 10,000 pounds. And he was in for lunch on Sunday, and he's like one of my chef dads, you know, him and Alan, though I got a lot of time for him, I love him. Yeah. But I said to him, oh, you paid me 10 grand. And I was working like 90 hours a week for 10 grand. And he's from up north. He was like, booting, times have changed.
So you were just 20 when you moved to London to work for Alan Williams.
Yeah, I must have just turned 20, yeah. Was I 19 or 20? Yeah. So yeah, I did like 4 years at the toll booth. So I kind of did like every year on all the sections.
Hmm.
And then me and my best friend, Jamie, who's now head chef at the toll booth, actually, me and him lived in France for a year. And we, well... 10 months. We did a ski season in Val d'Isère. We worked in a really nice hotel, actually. The food was pretty decent. But it's because all my friends went to university and started living their life, and I was still in the kitchen getting shouted and screamed at and forgetting to put salt into crushed potatoes and forgetting stupid stuff, thinking about it now. So it was nice to have that little 10-month. We were still working, but we worked hard and partied harder.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're young and why not? I think that's, you know, if you're not going to go to uni, right, then... Where else you can do it? So you came back after 10 months to work for Alan Williams. After your trip, right?
After your trip, yeah. So I got back, and then my sous chef at the time, Skez Aaron, he used to work at Boxwood. So when they were on the Berkeley as well. So obviously he knew Alan because Alan was head chef at Marcus. And he said to me, this guy's opening a restaurant. It's going to be really good. If you need to move to London now, you're still like 19, 20, do it. And then, I just text Alan, and then he rang me straight away. And I remember it, I was in the toll booth kitchen. He was like, I think he actually said to me, he's like, you're right, son. He's like, you want to come to London? I was like, yeah. So that was an amazing experience, you know, just to pack your bags and move to London.
Yeah. And I heard you were about 2 hours late for your interview.
Yeah. How do you know that? I said that somewhere else. But I wasn't. It's not because it's not because I was hungover or nothing. It was a really weird morning, that was, because you have to leave, even though Colchester's not far away, but to get to Mayfair for 7:30, 8:00, you need to leave at like 5:30 in the morning.
Mm.
So I'm on the train and I'm feeling really sick. And it was really busy train, like really packed. Like all the city workers were on it. It was horrible. I was getting pushed around. I didn't get a seat, so I was standing up and I started feeling really sick. And we're coming into Liverpool Street and I was like, oh my God, I'm either going to faint. You know, when you know you're about to faint or you're going to be sick.
Yeah.
And I just remember it was, I literally opened the train door as it pulled into Liverpool Street and I threw up everywhere.
Oh gosh.
And not one person stopped and asked me if I was all right. I literally got pushed while I was, I was at the door and all these men in suits and women were just pushing me out the way and I was throwing up everywhere. Not one person stopped me.
You had a really hard night partying.
Yeah, but I didn't. Yeah. And then, yeah, I got lost. I don't know. I don't know if you had iPhones then. Maybe I had like the first iPhone. And maybe you didn't have Google Maps then, did you? So I was just walking, not even like I'm old, but I was literally, I know where I was now. I was walking around the American Embassy on Grosvenor Square. And I was outside May's restaurant when it was May's. And I was just standing there and this little old lady walked past me. And I was like, excuse me, like I'm lost. And I'm like an hour and a half late for a job interview. Do you know where the Westbury Hotel is? And she was like, follow me, love. I'm not going that way, but I'll walk you. So she walked me down there and walked me into the front door at the Westbury. But there is still nice people in London. That's the first thing I thought.
That's quite sweet.
But Alan didn't even say nothing to me. He just looked at me. He was like, where have you been? And I was like, you've been walking around Mayfair. I was like, completely walking around Mayfair. Like, what a numpty. Absolute numpty.
Well, you made it. You got the job.
Yeah. No, it was good.
Yeah. And so from there, you worked at L'Autre Pierre under Andy McFadden.
Yeah, under Andy. Yeah. So I did a year with Alan and that was really, really great.
Yeah.
Then I was going to get another job, but it didn't quite work out. So then got in touch with Andy, and L'Autre Pierre was really good back then, to be honest. Like Andy was, he was only 24, 25 and I must have been 21. He was really pushing, you know. It was a really busy restaurant. Well, it's the Roganic now. Did you ever go to L'Autre Pierre?
I did, but it was a very long time ago. Roganic, I have as well.
Yeah, so obviously Roganic's shut now, but yeah, on Blandford Street.
Yeah.
And I just loved the buzz of the kitchen, you know. It was a hard, but at Alan's it was very super organised. It was like, at the toll booth we had a lot of chefs, but then at Alan's it was like to the next level, you know. We were like 14th best restaurant in the country. There was 5 chefs on larder. There was like 3 chefs on the meat section, 3 chefs on garnish. So I think there was 19 chefs in the kitchen, or 21, when I first worked there. I didn't have that when I was a head chef there, by the way. But it was very super organised, and it was like really strict, but in a good way. Alan's got a heart of gold, but it was strict. And then I went to L'Autre Pierre, and there was like 4 chefs, and we were doing 80 for lunch, 80 for dinner, and it was just, it was make or break, really. It was super hard kitchen, most probably hardest kitchen I've ever worked in.
Yeah, they all have, you know, like you went to Pierre de Terre afterwards, and that's a notoriously tough kitchen as well. Yeah. So how was that period of time in your life, and how did you cope with the stress of it all? Because they are tough kitchens at that
time. They are tough, yeah. They are really tough. And I know that's getting spoken about a lot in the industry as well. But I have to say, like, if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have the kind of mental capabilities kind of I do now as well. Yeah, it was hard. Like I used to have to, the only reason I was promoted to a sous chef there is because I was most probably the only one who lasted the longest, you know. I know that it wasn't because of my skills or my ability. It's just because I got on with it and we did it, you know. But yeah, it was tough. And then Andy moved over to Pierre de Terre as well, so that was a change in kind of the business, but it was good. But after doing just under 3 years, and not many chefs did 3 years in that restaurant. I think there was only about 2 of us in the whole time. So it was, it was time to go, but it was good. It taught me a lot. It was my first sous chef job. So I went as a chef de partie. Then 6 months later, I was junior sous. Then 6 months later, I was sous chef. So it was the first time running a kitchen.
Yeah.
And no one can ever teach you how to run a kitchen or how to deal with situations like, oh my God, that fish is overcooked and falling apart, or that meat is raw. Do you know what I mean? You have to be when you're a head chef or a sous chef and you're running that kitchen, what I try and teach Adam and Freddie now, you have to come up with, you have to make quick decisions. They might not always be right, but it's, you never get taught that as a chef, you know, so it's quite interesting.
When you say that you've kind of those kind of hard kitchens got you to where you are now, how do you train your own staff with, you know, with, I mean, obviously you're not as harsh as, you know, the teachings were on you, but how do you implement those sort of teachings on your staff, if that makes sense? Did I make sense?
No, I guess it makes sense, but I want to say also, no one was harsh on me. I wasn't from the era of where we got, I didn't really get beaten up. Well, I didn't, but like, do you know what I mean? I'm sure there's a lot, I'm still young. I'm only 28, nearly 29. So the people older than me must've gone through maybe something a bit bad. Really? So
yeah,
I didn't go through, I'm not going to sit here and say I was abused or nothing. So I wasn't at all. I had a great time. You know, we used to party hard, but it was just high intensity, I guess is the word, you know, it was a high tense kitchen. You have to make it or break it. A lot of people did come and go in that kitchen because a lot of people couldn't handle it. If you just understood it and worked with it, it did make you.
Mm. And so from that, you actually worked all over the world. You moved to New York, Copenhagen, Iceland. Where would you say has had the most influence on you as a chef?
Yeah, well, it was a funny one, really, because I basically didn't take any holiday in 3 years at Lourdes-Pierre. And I said to Andy, like, I was pretty sick of London, but for then, I remember that feeling. I'm not now, but I was a bit like, oh, I've been here for like 4 years now. I haven't got any money because you didn't get paid good. I'm skint. I can't afford nothing. And I haven't even seen the world. All my friends were finishing uni, doing all their gap years. So I said to Andy, oh, I need to do something. So Andy was amazing. He said, where do you want to go? And we're sorted out. I gave him and David like 6 months notice. I was going to say, look, I need to move on. So they were amazing. So basically they let me choose the restaurant I went to work in, and I went there for 2 months and they carried on paying me.
Oh, wow.
I didn't take any holidays. So that's amazing, you know, but where, if you work hard. So I went to Iceland. So I went to restaurant Dill.
Okay.
So I was reading the book. So I used to get all my money and all I used to spend it on was cookbooks and beer, to be honest. But so I was reading the book North by Gunnar, and it was, I don't know, I just loved that book. And I don't know, it's just something about Nordic world. But it was, even though it's still big now, but it, like, nearly 10 years, well, when was it? Would have been like 8 years ago. It was quite big at the time, wasn't it? It's still big now, but the Nordic scenery was really blowing up.
Right.
So I was like, right, I want to go over there. I don't want to go to France, and I don't want to go and work in all the restaurants where all the normal chefs go and do their like 6 month stages. I want to go to the different places, kind of get a different kind of feel of it. I don't know, not in a bad way, but I know I, at the start of my career, I always wanted to work at a three star and do three star. But then since time went on, I don't know, it didn't really fit with me personally. I wanted to go to, I love the one star kind of level or the two star level, because I feel like they're always pushed, not like three star doesn't push, but with the food, you can be like more creative and push that boundaries a little bit more. So I wanted to see all the kitchens most people have not been to. So I think I was one of the first English people to go and do a stage at Dill. So just when it started, it was a beautiful sight. And I don't know, I just love the Scandinavian kind of culture. They don't open for lunch. they all start at 2. They finish at 12 at night. They go out until 6 in the morning. They sleep and then they come back for dinner service. And it was just very laid back, you know, coming from London and seeing like the high intensity to just, they were very relaxed. And it was like the restaurant was in the middle of the kitchen was in the middle of the restaurant. It just taught me a lot, really. It taught me a lot of maybe about life as well. You know, we all need to have a bit of time off and look after our own bodies and minds. So I think that was a big learning curve for me.
It sounds amazing. I wonder why I even came back.
Yeah, I know. They did offer me a job as well. But Reykjavik's beautiful, but I don't know if I could live there.
Yeah, I've visited, and yes, it is. It is really beautiful, but home is home, right?
Home is home, yeah. And then I came back, and then I did 2 months in New York, working in numerous different restaurants, all for free. I didn't get paid for it. Luckily, I saved enough money from Lourdes-Pierre to be able to pay a £400 flight to New York, and we lived in some dodgy Airbnb in Kazioko Street in Brooklyn, and we nearly got robbed on our first night of leaving JFK Airport. It was that was a learning curve as well. me and my friend Charlie walking around Brooklyn at 2 o'clock in the morning with suitcases, and people were looking at us like, boys, what are you doing? Yeah. We were like, we're lost. We are completely lost.
And then London to New York.
Yeah.
Get lost a lot.
And then, yeah. And then I came back and I did 2 months in Copenhagen after that. That was really good. Yeah. So I worked in restaurant studio for a month when Torsten was there, and that was amazing. And he did offer a job. So I always kind of semi-regret that I didn't take that job. But again, there was something about Copenhagen. I loved it, but I realized that London, when you're born and raised here, you know, not that I'm from London, I'm from Essex, but you just miss all the little things in life. So no. So it made me come back and appreciate London a lot more and understand where we're at. And the food here is amazing, huh? The amount of restaurants we have, which are just beautiful. And I think we've got a bit of everything in London as well. You can have that fine dining, you can have that one star level where it's not fine dining, but still amazing, you know? Yeah. I don't think many countries really have that.
No, well, I think the food in London has evolved so much. Just the dining scene, as you said, it's evolved so much since you started to now. It's quite amazing how, you know, the fine dining restaurants have just become so much more relaxed. And it's...
Yeah, well, where are the tablecloths?
Yeah, yeah.
Every restaurant had a tablecloth, no?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think the pioneer for that for me was one of my first Michelin starred restaurant I ate in was Arbutus. And I think Anthony Dimitri is like, he's a chef, you know, he's an absolute legend. So I think his cooking is, I always wish I worked for him as well. I just think he kind of thinks a bit similar to me, maybe. I don't know. Well, I think similar to him. I just think he's amazing. But I remember going to Arbutus and it was so different. And then Wild Honey, the original site as well, like, every restaurant, I couldn't afford to eat in every restaurant when I first moved to London because you were getting paid piss all. So it was quite nice to go there and no tablecloths and relaxed. And yeah. No, it's definitely, I think the same as well.
Yeah. And so you worked at Olie de Boo when you came back from your travels.
Yeah, so how
did that compare with some of your other experiences?
It was good. It was really good. I got a real lot of time for Olie, to be honest. I learned loads from my year there. It was mad because it wasn't a kitchen. It had, like, if anyone worked there, they would tell you, like, you had 4 gas burners. You basically had like an outside catering 4 gas burner with a dodgy salamander above it, and then a barbecue next to it, a big green egg, which was like the nicest bit of equipment, and a little oven, a little deck oven. That was it. So like what he did to that restaurant and what that restaurant become, and now look at Hyde, you know what I mean? You walk around the Hyde's kitchen, it's everything tip top. I'm sure it is because Ollie went through that 7 years of taboo where it was amazing what he pulled off there. It was amazing. And he was a businessman for me. I loved working for him because I don't know another Michelin starred chef who owns their own restaurant in the heart of London. In Fitzrovia, you know, he like, I know he had backers, but he owned it and managed it and kept the books and ran it and made a successful business out of it. So no, I've got so much time for him.
Yeah. He's a real entrepreneur.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I always call him a chef entrepreneur. You know, he used to say to us, like, I remember one time he broke down a whole tasting menu for me and told me, okay, so that's that cost. And then you get to that. And then, okay, now you've got cancel tax and then you've got the bin collection. Do you know what I mean? No other chef taught me how much it costs to go and get the bins picked up. So here I always ask the back of house manager, how much are these bins? And do you know what I mean? Do you know how much money it costs to pick up bins in the centre of London? It's like unbelievable amount.
Don't they just come on rubbish day?
No. These companies, I don't know. I'll tell you what I'm going to do is become a binman in life and get my own binman company. But learning about cancel tax and just all them things what not many other chefs could teach you because they all work in big hotels and do you know what I mean? Like I am now, like I don't have to worry about rent. Okay, I have to worry about the P&L every month and make sure that I'm not spending too much money and that we're making money and the hotel are tight on me like that, but I still can pay my staff really well and I don't have to, and I can employ as many staff as I want. Do you know what I mean by that? Where Ollie had to think about it completely all stripped back.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
himself.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure there's, you know, he still does a lot of it. I spoke to him last year and he's, such a phenomenal guy from where he's come, where he started and to where he is now. He's just brilliant and he's still growing.
Yeah, completely. No, he's a lovely, lovely guy.
Yeah.
Got a lot of time for Ollie. No, it was a really great year that was.
Yeah. And so after that, you became sous chef at Alan Williams. So you went back to the Westbury. How was it going back there again?
Yeah, it was different. It was different. It was a bit of a, yeah, it was different, really. Not in a bad way or a good way. It was just the kitchen had changed a bit. The front of house was a bit different, but Alan still had a plan and a bit of a focus. So yeah, it was good. So I went back to sous chef for like 3-4 months. And then he was like, okay, let's make you head chef pretty much. So it was good. So no, I love Alan so much. He's like my dad, you know. He's my chef dad. I speak to him all the time. Yeah. Even now he's a lot of support and, do you know what I mean? He's really lovely. And that's my time being a head chef there. It was really interesting because it's when he took the job at the Wild Rabbit. So he kind of like didn't leave, but he kind of went to work at the Wild Rabbit 4 days a week. So it kind of left me a lot more in control. So that was a big learning curve for me. So I feel like that's where I learned kind of, not that I have my own style, but I kind of learned what kind of food we want to do and take inspiration from wherever I everywhere I worked, and then listen to the customer feedback and kind of make my own kind of idea. Mm. And Alan was super supportive about that as well. And I worked with him and he worked with me to make that even better. So no, that was an amazing 3 years. Yeah, I was back there for 3 years and that was, yeah.
I visited when you were head chef, actually. And
did you?
It was phenomenal. I think that's, I love that restaurant. It's a shame it closed, but I absolutely loved it. And I think that you came to our table and said hello as well. It was brief, yeah, but it was...
I looked younger than I do now.
I think we were all a little bit shocked, actually. We were like, really?
The head chef? Yeah. No. Yeah, that's my favorite one. That is, I still get it today. I tell you, when people say it to me, I'm like, do you not think I've heard this one before? Like, do you really think you're the time? Yeah, I get it all the time. It most probably the one thing what annoys me, to be honest.
Oh, in a few years' time, you'll absolutely love it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, people do tell me that as well, but I don't know why people feel like they have to tell me that. And then they say, what have you done? And then I have to explain myself to make myself fit that position. It's quite weird. I don't think many people have to do that in their jobs.
Yeah. Do you think maybe they probably think there's a secret to something you're eating and they probably want to know what it is, yeah. What you feed yourself.
the cornflakes in the morning with a shot of espresso.
I haven't had cornflakes for years. I used to love cornflakes.
Yeah, no, I had some this morning, actually. That's what was in my head. Really? No, but the Westbury was amazing. And we managed to do something, like, even though the restaurant was amazing, but for me and the team and what we created, again, because obviously you go through patches. Alan had a head chef, Richard, who was my first head chef, then had Charles. Mm. And then, so do you know what I mean? It went through every restaurant, because it'd been there for 10 years. Mm. Not many restaurants in a hotel survive 10 years, you know, so... I think our kind of semi to last, our penultimate patch at the end was super important. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have half my team who I have upstairs now.
Oh, so I wouldn't be here. The same team from Alan Williams?
Not all the same team, no. So Adam, my sous chef, who's phenomenal, he joined when I was head chef. We employed him as a commie and he just grew the ranks a little bit, did 2 years with us. And then he was kind of finished. So I said to him, you need to go and work somewhere better. So I got in touch with Chef Aaron from the Hand and Flowers. Mm-hmm. And then I sent Adam to the Hand and Flowers and he did a year and a bit there. And I always said, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, carry on. That was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
That was amazing.
But I always said to Adam, like, when I get my next job, I'll make sure like you're going to come be my sous chef kind of thing. And he was only 23, 24. So for him, it was a big jump. But I did say to him, look, you don't have to do it if you don't want to. Because I always feel a bit, I don't know, I kind of wish I did go and work in other places. I think that time at L'Entrepierre when I just kept getting promoted because I was the only one who could handle it was good for my career. But also I look at it a bit now and think maybe it was bad. Maybe I could have pushed myself and gone to work, I don't know, in a restaurant somewhere else or whatever it is, you know. Because the quicker you go up the ranks, you're never really going to come back, are you? You know, not many chefs go back to being a chef de partie after being a head chef.
Yeah, totally agree. But what's really lovely about what you're doing is that you're actually recognizing, those kind of those leadership skills are just coming so naturally to you, and you're training, you've been basically nurturing the people that you know are going to come and work for you, which is really, really amazing. I love
Well,
that.
for me, I don't want to be one of them chefs who, when I'm in, they're not allowed to do the pass, or when I'm there, they're not allowed to do what they do when I'm not there, kind of job. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
And the more for me, it's better for me, because one chef said to me before, when you become a head chef, you stop learning. But I disagree with that completely. But what I can do now is learn from my team, because like Adam's coming up with some amazing ideas, stuff I would never dream of thinking about, but we make it fit into the restaurant. And all the other guys, Josh and John and Freddie and Tilly and all the guys on the sections, I'm more than happy for them to come up with ideas. Like Neil on fish, he's got a new challenge. He's just started to smash the fish section. I prep all his fish for him every morning, but I set him a little challenge when we came back. I was like, you're going to do the lunch menu fish dishes. So now every week he's got like six recipes. And when I told him it, he was like looking at me and he was like, amazing. And then the next day he came to me with six dishes. And then I work with him together to make them fit our style. But they do completely. He's got a beautiful razor clam dish on at the moment,
Yeah.
which is just lovely. So it makes them want, hopefully for me, it makes them stay longer.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Because you're giving them freedom, right, to be
Yeah.
creative. So, where outside of your team, where do you get your inspiration from?
I don't know. Well, your suppliers, really. I don't know. I have a really great relationship with all my suppliers. Jody at Flying Fish, Adam and the family at HG Walter, every chef will on here. Like, I'm not saying I'm the only one, but if you have that little WhatsApp group, I've got a WhatsApp group with every single supplier, and you don't want to read their messages because they're quite filthy. But them guys tell you what's coming in, what's good. And once you've got that good relationship with you, they're going to send you all the good stuff as well, and at a good price, which
Yeah.
is a good business point, what Ollie used to teach us. So I don't know, they get the inspiration. And nowadays you get social media, you know.
Yeah.
Social media is massive. Every chef knows what everyone's doing.
Yeah.
Back in the yeah.
Sorry, go on. Back in the day, yeah.
I was going to say, back in the day, I used to hear stories about you came to London, you either worked at the Square, Pied-à-Terre, would have been Gordon's. I think there was, and Le Gavroche knows that it would have only really been like four two-star restaurants to possibly work in, kind of thing, you know. And if you worked for Marcus, then you didn't then go and work for someone else. Or if you went, do you know what I mean? I think it was a lot more maybe secretive back then. Maybe I'm wrong, but them chefs kind of all stuck with them chefs and did that. Where now, I think and for the better, I think everything's a lot more community. I get chefs write to me and say, and good chefs, and say, oh, how do you do that with your lobster? How do you, like, I had a really good chef write to me just this morning and be like, oh, what's that foam on top of your tomato dish? Can you send me the recipe? But then I'll ask them, like, oh, what's that? Any chance you can share that recipe? And now it's a lot more open, where I think 10 years ago, everyone was a bit
Cagey.
tight, a
Yeah, a
bit
bit
cagey.
secretive. No, but it's interesting that you say about the suppliers, because over COVID, we have, people at home have learned, who restaurants' suppliers are, and we have amazing quality meats and fish coming home now because we know who to go to. So,
Yeah.
I think COVID has changed. I think because of COVID, actually, a lot has changed in terms of sharing, like you said, recipes, because we're supporting each other now. And we know that, we've all been in the same boat. So there's, we've got to support each other and
Yeah.
learn from each other. And it's absolutely fine. We can all still grow.
And support them suppliers as well, you know. I think the only people who did good out of COVID, really good, was Amazon and supermarkets. I think Amazon absolutely smashed it, didn't they? Of course they
Totally.
would. I think every day I had an Amazon parcel delivered to my house. You just did. There was nothing else to do except go on Amazon and buy useless stuff. But then supermarkets, you know. But around us, we've got all every street corner, you'll see a good little, even in London, or more importantly in London, you'll see a little veg supplier, like on Blandford Street, that little fruit and veg shop, you know. We need to keep them old boys busy and get our meat from our butchers, because that's the chain we want to keep. If we break that chain and lose that chain and almost let the supermarkets win with the meat from other countries and stuff, then that's going to be a real shame, because we are an island and we're a small country.
Yeah.
And I think especially now with Brexit, we all need to look after each other and buy from each other.
Yeah, absolutely. It was funny. I ordered some strawberries the other day. There's this new app called Zap, and they deliver within 15 minutes. It's unbelievable. And I was making a strawberry salad, and I didn't have any strawberries, so I just got them really quickly. And it's funny because on the box it said seasonal strawberries. So I'm thinking obviously from the UK, right? But it. They're actually from, I can't remember where they're from now, but they're somewhere really, really obscure and far away. And I was thinking, okay, so they're not the UK seasonal, they're somewhere else.
It's definitely, yeah, that's bad. I have a little joke every year of asparagus season. You'll see some kitchens use asparagus from Kenya when asparagus is in season, and it always makes me laugh. So we have a little
Yeah.
run-in. Whenever I ring the supplier now, me and Adam have a little joke. We're like, yeah, can we get that fresh local asparagus from Kenya, please?
Yeah, it's quite, I find it so bizarre. But
It's mad.
moving on. So the beginnings of you working at the Dorchester. So you actually met Robert Whitfield. He kind of, I guess, headhunted you, you could say, when you were working at Alan Williams.
Everyone always says it was Robert, but it was Mirko, who's the hotel manager. He
Right.
came in. He came in to eat with a regular guest we had. He was a good regular guest, but he could be a bit funny sometimes, not in a bad way, but he knew what he wanted. He was one of them kind of people, and he must have come here. I think he comes here all the time, maybe. So maybe edit that. But anyway, Mirko, and then they just said, "Oh, bring Tom out so he can meet her." And I remember someone saying to me, "It's the hotel manager from the Dorchester," in briefing before. If it must have been Chris, the GM at the time. And to be honest, I wasn't asked. We had loads of people come in, and I didn't really care. I was super happy at the Westbury. I had an amazing team. We had a Michelin star, four rosettes. I was maintaining it. Do you know what I mean? That, for me, at the age of 25, to be head chef there for good over 2 years was one of the highlights of my career, you know?
Yes.
But then I met Mirko, and then they invited me in for a little interview, and it was quite funny. I won't tell you what happened, but Mirko was the first person who interviewed me, and I didn't know it was an interview. They just said, come over for a chat. And me being dumb, I just didn't know that's the way it works. And Mirko just kind of eyed me out a little bit, and he kind of started to fight me. He was like, are you sure that's you? Is that you? Like, you run that kitchen. Like, you're showing me all the photos. Like, this is your dish. Is this your dish? And he was swearing at me and calling me names. And I was like, this is mad, isn't it? What's going on here?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we just got chatting, really. But he's a legend. I love the guy. He's great. He's great. And then, yeah, me and Robert then met each other, and we just kept talking. And no, and then it's just been quite natural since then, really. To give the Dorchester their due, they've just opened me. They've welcomed me with open arms, you know. Any idea I gave them, what I wanted to do, what my kind of vision was, they just agreed with it. Which, looking back now, at the time, I was like, look, guys, if you want me in this, then this is what we need to do. Because it was quite, we were the first, I know there's maybe another grill what's done it now, but we were the first kind of grill hotel restaurant to kind of say, let's kind of take it to a modern approach. Do you know what I mean? So it was a bit of a big jump looking back. I think Mr. Whitfield took a gamble on me and what my vision was, but I'd like to think it's paid off. And he seems super happy. And we've done really well, and the restaurant's busy, so.
Yeah, I think that's probably, they needed to shake things up a bit, I think. And you were just 26 years old,
Yeah,
and
26 when they approached me, yeah.
they just needed, something fresh, and you were it. So talk to us about the kind of changes that you've made to really make your mark on the restaurant.
So the first thing I wanted to do was, well, I can slag it off anyway now, but the old restaurant used to have like yellow tablecloths. They were yellow, I don't know why. It was very dark. It was very quiet. It was never busy. I don't know. It was just very strange feeling. So when I went in, and it was very square, it was just a square room, and it didn't break up. I don't know. It just had a really, really weird vibe about it. And they would agree with me because that's what they told me. And then I said, okay, so we need to freshen it up. We need to. So the first thing I introduced was the pudding bar. So we put a bar in the back of the restaurant. Like, you can see it when you walk in. So before COVID, after your main course, you can come up there, and we put the pastry section outside with the Mr. Whippy machine, which, when I said to them, it was a bit of a fight that day, I think. I think we were talking about ice cream, and I said to them, what's the best ice cream in the world? And about all of the five big bosses in suits started telling me all of these mad flavors. And I was like, no, it's a Mr. Whippy or a McFlurry. That's the best ice cream in the world. 100%. The texture, the kind of the mouthfeel of it. It's the best ice cream. So yes. Then they all looked at me like I was mad, but now they all agree. So then we invested in the Mr. Whippy machine. We redesigned the restaurant a little bit, which I was really involved with, to kind of break it up and make it feel, we got some blankets in the middle of the restaurant to make it feel quite nice. Can you hear that? Sorry, they're making a massive noise.
Sorry.
One of the sous chefs just looked at me. And then where was I? Yeah, and then we redesigned the restaurant a little bit. Obviously, I wanted to get my team involved. So I got Adam to come down to get an interview, got Freddie, got Josh. So basically, I employed my team in about 2 weeks.
Brilliant.
The music, I did all the music for the restaurant. So we got a new music system. I picked the playlists for it. I did the uniform for the front of house, which was the same uniform company we got in touch at Taboo for Hyde. So it's what all the guys wear, uniform studio. We got them involved. We just freshened it up, you know, all new crockery. Crockery came from my friend Laura down in Peckham. So it was amazing. It was a big fight to try and get crockery into homemade pottery crockery into the hotel. All the plates were new, trays, the staff. Jen came, general manager. So I think from the old grill, I only kept one chef, Neil. He was the guy on fish now. And then front of house, a few of them stayed, Pierre, Marie, Anastasia. So yeah, and then we did a big recruitment push. It was a big push to get open, and they really, I guess we kind of invested a lot into it, because we did get PR'd quite a little bit as well, which was good. I didn't really know it at the time, so we were so busy at working, and then the restaurant became busy.
Wow, so you have had, I mean, you've really made your mark on it, because all these ideas, they've all come from you. Talk to us about the menu. And I mean, I've heard that they still had some of the old classics from 1931. I was amazed when I read that.
Really? Not my classics.
Well, no. Actually, no, not. Well, that is quite a long time since I classics on the menu. But talk to us about the menu, but do you ever get anyone asking for the old classics?
No, to be honest, it was one thing the hotel management were worried about, was upsetting maybe the regulars, but actually every single regular has been amazing. There was one regular who didn't like me at the start, but now they love me and they come all the time and they're great.
How can they not like you?
Yeah, I know. No, I know. But we took it from what I call the Dover Soul crowd. So it was a very Dover Soul crowd before, and then we just kind of but we're not doing overcomplicated food. We're just getting the best possible ingredients we can and cooking them simply. But actually, a lot of the regulars now just love it, because they're saying it's a lot more fresh, it's light, it feels lighter, it feels more kind of informal. I felt like it was very formal before, and I don't understand why, because it didn't really need to be. Yeah. Where I think now we've created a restaurant inside a hotel, where before I think it was a hotel restaurant. So I think what we've done is really amazing, and it's great. Every day, every service, we have industry people come in to eat with us, you know? Mm. And I always say to Adam, like, isn't that just beautiful? Because when me and him were at the Westbury or wherever I worked, this is not slagging off the restaurant, but I never looked at my chef next to me and said, oh, do you want to go and eat at the grill at the Dorchester tomorrow? Do you know what I mean? So I think for me, that's one of the most proudest things we've done here, right? Is that we get so many industry people and people love it. And it's just, yeah, it's been really good. But the menu's a really lovely little layout. So it's like a first course, second course, third course, fourth course. So it's like a light starter, a dirty starter is what I like to call it. Then the main course and then the pudding. So the first course could be like, we've got the crab tart or the beef tartare on it. The beef tartare is, I don't know, I don't think I'll ever take it off, because it's just, I eat it like once a week just to make sure that it's consistent, and it's just delicious. It's so nice. It's mostly one of my favorite dishes. And I never normally say that about my own food, but it's just really tasty. And then the second course, we've got like a nice scallop dish, or we've got Kaufman squid bolognese. So I'm lucky enough to know Pierre Kaufman very well, and he's just an absolute legend, you know, for what he's done for the industry and what he's done for Great Britain as well. I just think it's amazing. So I just said to him, oh, can I do your squid dish, what you used to do at the Berkeley? And he's like, yeah, of course. And he comes in and tries it, and he sent me the recipe, and he's like, yeah, I'm sure you'll make it better, but just do it a bit like this. So we I know I call it Kaufman squid bolognese, and people just love it. It's mostly one of the favorite dishes on the menu, and all the kind of people who remember the Berkeley Kaufman's then, like, they kind of like remember it as well. So I don't know, it just makes you feel nice. It's nostalgic, you know, really nice.
It sounds amazing. Do you do like a full-on tasting menu, like, you know, 7-8
courses? No. So it's no tasting menu, no. So we do a full course menu, but you can have free courses. So three courses is £60, four courses is £75. And then the lunch menu, we change weekly, and then it's three courses for £30. So it's one of the things I was really, really big on. It's one thing the hotel maybe wasn't massively keen on, but I really wanted to do an approachable lunch menu. And I wanted the value of the menu to be really approachable as well. There was no way I was going to put hotel prices on the menu because you just don't attract... Of course, you're going to attract. I want everyone to come, but that's the point. I wanted everyone to come. You know, I want my mum and dad to come, who can come and have a £30 lunch menu, that they can sit next to someone who can have the four course at £75 and have the lobster with a £20 supplement on it. You know, and no one feels awkward. And you see it on a busy Saturday night. You know, you've got some big clientele, and you know you've got people from Essex and Kent. Not that they're not big clientele, because they are. But that was important for me, to have everyone.
That is pretty amazing, your pricing structure. I think that makes it a lot more accessible to so many more people. And you're absolutely right. You know, when people think of going to the Dorchester, they think that it's going to be really expensive, but you've really turned things around.
Yeah, and people love it, you know. Yeah. I speak to people all the time who would never normally dream to come, like you just said, would never dream to come to the hotel. And then they come, they have a lovely lunch menu, and then we give them a nice tour of the kitchen, bring them down here to the main kitchen, and then they come back again, and we're seeing it. And then they come back and treat themselves to the a la carte next time, maybe, you know, to the £75 set menu. So, yeah, and we're so lucky. I've got so many regulars. What Alan was amazing at was really looking after regulars. Alan really, like, detailed that into my head. So we had so many regulars at the Westbury, and I'm very lucky that some of them have followed me over to here. We have people who come in weekly, and they're not super, super rich. They're not like, they're just normal people. They're like us. They're like my mum and dad, you know, but it's so special. They come out here, and we have great, great banter with them as well. Like, it's really funny. We have some really, really good customers with good, they know many stories about me and stuff, which is funny.
Well, I'm sure I'd love to hear some of those stories.
No, it's so good.
One thing that we actually skipped over, actually, was a Michelin star at Alan Williams. So it had a star before you started?
Yeah, so it had a star in the 2011 guide.
Yeah.
So yeah, it retained its star for 10 years. 11 yeah. years? Yeah, 10 years. But obviously when I took over as head chef and predominantly doing the food, it was amazing, you know, to be thrown into that.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been such a wonderful thing for you, because you were head chef and you're still retaining the Michelin star for the restaurant. And I think always think that at that point, it's not retaining it, actually. It's Michelin recognizing that your level of cooking is Michelin star level.
Yeah, definitely. But they always say it's harder to retain it than it is to win it.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you feel about Michelin stars for the Grill at the Dorchester?
I would absolutely love it. I'm not going to sit here and be like, I don't want it, because I do, to be honest. But actually, since COVID and all of that, I have, maybe me 2 years ago was like, hey, we need to come here. We need to win a star. That's what I want to do. I have to do it for me. But maybe now I'm a bit more, since COVID, I think there's a bit more to life. You know, spending time with my partner, with Rachel, and seeing my family more. And do you know what I mean? And not always have to be here. I think when I first opened, I almost felt, even though I'd let Adam run the kitchen, but I had to be here because maybe Michelin might come in and maybe that might happen. Or do you know what I mean? Where now I'll take tomorrow night off. If they come in, they come in. Yeah. They came in 2 weeks ago. Like, I spotted them straight away. They've been here a few times. So we just wait and see. If we deserve it, we deserve it. If we don't, then I don't know.
Then you're
I
might still lose really busy. So it's
like, yeah, and I'm still really busy. Yeah. But the most important thing is your most regular customers. You know, when we first opened, and all these regular customers who come in and support us as a business. You know, Michelin, okay, they can support you as a business, if you win a star and people are going to come here, but the regulars who are making the restaurant busy now, they're most important.
So I hear that you are a big lover of Indian food.
Yeah, I am. Where do you keep reading all this stuff about me? I am, to be honest. It's one of my dreams, actually, is to travel India. I really want to start at the top and learn the differences. How many regions are there of food in India? There's
unbelievable.
It's unbelievable amount.
Yeah.
So I really want to do that. Obviously, I don't want to go there at the moment, but yeah. I don't know, in the future, maybe if I get a year break.
Yeah, and it would probably take you about that long, to be honest, to get through the whole of India. But in particular, you love buttered chicken. I've heard that. Do you make it yourself?
Sometimes we make it. Adam's really good at making curry. How do we make it?
Yeah.
Add loads of butter.
Do you add loads of butter?
Loads of it. You need loads of it. You almost need it. Well, you know, it's a good Indian takeaway when like it's almost about to split. You're just on that verge of the fat just really, really cut. But it's not greasy. It's just about to split.
Yeah.
The one near me in Marylebone, they do it really well, actually, to be honest. And they know it when I ring up. They know straight away.
I'm going to make
Do you like a buttered chicken?
I love it. I love butter chicken. It's nice. Probably one of my favorites. Butter chicken and butter naan. But I make it at home. And my kids have eaten butter chicken everywhere and they say they love mine the most.
When you come in for something to eat, you have to bring some in.
I am going to bring some in for you. And I'm going to see if you can guess what's in it, because I actually make mine with minimum butter.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you put in like cashews or something like that?
Something like that.
Cashews, isn't it? I got it in one.
You did. You didn't even need to taste it.
I don't know. There's just something about Indian food. I don't know. It's because I'm English as well, you know. We do love. But what I want to see, what I want to go to India for, is to see how different our British Indian food is. Because I'm sure it is completely miles away.
Well, I think there is, you know, somewhat of adapting to the British palate, you know, maybe a little bit less chili or a little bit. And I think everyone's a lot more health conscious now. So things like, you know, drowning it in butter, it just doesn't, you know, I think a lot of people are a little bit more conscious of that kind of, you know, way of eating now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So we spoke a little bit about an award that you got early in your career, but just in 2019, you were winner of the Acorn Award by the caterer.
Yeah, that was really nice. That was a shock. It was good, really. That was like one award I actually had heard of. And I knew the likes of the names who won it. It was like Marcus and I think Gordon won it, and some really big names had won it. And it was the good thing about winning the Acorn Awards, especially them, is it was the year before COVID, is that they take you away to a really nice hotel and you get to spend two nights. You get to spend a night there and you get really, you're with all the Acorn winners and you have a good time.
Where did you go?
Well, luckily I went to Kenilworth Park, which is obviously part of the Dorchester collection. But I was still in my last week at Allen's, but obviously I'd taken the job here, but no one knew because I wasn't allowed to tell anyone. It was the hotel this side and the hotel that side, made me keep it a bit of a secret.
Right.
But then obviously everyone knew I was leaving Allen's. So at the Acorn Awards, they were like, so where are you going? And I was like, I can't tell you. But then obviously, because Kenilworth Park knew and Zoe, the general manager, they put me in like the best suite they had.
Oh, nice.
So they were like, why are you in a suite and we're in one of these little rooms? And then they basically all worked it out.
My places.
I think Monica Galletti worked it out, actually. Monica was there. And I think Monica said, you're going to the Dorchester, aren't you? And I was like, ah, bollocks.
She's brilliant. I love her.
She's a legend.
Lovely woman.
Yeah, really nice.
Yeah, she is. So how do you actually become a winner? Is it, do you go through a competition or is it?
No, you kind of get put forward for it, if I remember. Okay. You get put forward for it and then they send you something. They say you might win it, and then you have to like write why you're going to win it. But you do it from like a kind of manager business point of view. It's like, so I remember I had to talk about how I kept my staff, how many staff I had, how much money we made, what was our profit, what was our GP. They're quite in depth, actually. They want you to understand this. Yeah, they say it's the next people in the industry who are going to run businesses and do something good. So yeah, it was, no, I do remember writing that when they sent me that. It was quite, yeah, I was just honest.
Yeah. Amazing. And you're also in the top 100 National Restaurant Awards for 2021. That's
amazing. Which was amazing. Yeah, really amazing, to be honest. I was super shocked because I'm in for the Chef to Watch as well, but against some really, really amazing chefs. So I'm definitely not going to win that, but that's fine. It's still nice to be included.
Absolutely.
But just to make the numbers up. But then when we got that, and then every chef was saying it on their Instagram, weren't they? Do you remember all of them had them boxes what were popping up?
Yeah.
And in my head, I was like, oh, I haven't been sent one. This is going to be annoying. This is annoying. We're not going to be in it. We're not going to be in it. And then I went up to check my little pigeonhole. Pigeonhole? Yeah, it's pigeonhole. Do you remember that from school?
Yeah.
I've never called it a pigeonhole before.
Bringing out school days in you?
Yeah. Well, what do you call it, though? It is a pigeonhole, isn't it? We have a room and my name's and my postcode's in it. It's a pigeonhole. And there was an envelope in it and I was like, oh, my God. And I felt it. I was like, oh. And then, I brought it downstairs and I, like, gave it to Adam and he, like, looked at me and I was like, and all the boys were swearing in a good way. Because, I don't know, I think we got it one of the last out of everyone. So it was, I don't know, it's just, when you see it on Instagram and it makes you, not makes you feel, it just makes you feel a bit, oh, no. We're not going to get it because everyone else, Tom, Dick and Harry have got it and we haven't got it. So to be included is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Like, really is amazing. It's just, it makes me so proud to see how far we've come.
Yeah.
For me, 3 years, it's taken me 3 years to get to where we are. But for the team and being open, well, not being open, but in what we've done in 2 years from a team point of view is just, yeah, it's incredible.
It is. It's absolutely brilliant. And what are your ambitions for the future? What are your personal ambitions?
Just keep going, really. I think the collection, the Dorchester Collection, are an amazing company to work for. And they've got big new things happening as well. So, yeah, I'd love to stay with the company, maybe do something else with them as well. Keep this as the baby, give this to Adam, and then I can just fly around the world, go and see the other properties.
Go to India.
go business class, hopefully, if they're listening. I don't know, really, because when I first started doing interviews like 4 or 5 years ago when I was head chef for Alan, they always ask you, where are you going to be in the next 5 years? And I wouldn't have said the Dorchester. So you never know. So just keep going, really. And things happen. I just want it to happen naturally and organically, you know. Hopefully we'll do a bit more TV work. Yes. Hopefully the restaurant keeps getting busy. Hopefully we win a star. Hopefully the team don't leave me so I don't have to work so hard.
Okay.
And just keep it moving.
Yeah.
Just keep it moving, really.
Good luck for all of that.
Yeah, no worries.
Couple of last things. I just wanted to finish off with what kind of advice would you give to young chefs out there who are, you know, like yourself, looking to become a head chef or perhaps own their own restaurant? What kind of advice do you give to those people?
I think it's just about, well, work hard. It's going to be hard. It's long hours. It's long days. Ask Rachel, my partner. She'll tell you. I haven't had a day off in about 3 weeks because we're doing bits and bobs, you know. She always says to me, she's like, how do you do it? But you just got to work hard, keep going. It is worth it, you know. Something does, it does pay off in the end, I think. Keep your head down. Just work for a chef who you really want to work for, you know. Really important to work for someone who you think you just want to, we're like sponges, we always are. Doesn't matter what position you are. Just keep learning from everyone, keep moving forward, work hard. Might be a few tears on the way. Don't get, I used to cry on a bus home. I'm not afraid to admit it. But just keep going because there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. I think my mum gave me the best bit of advice before. When I was younger, especially when I found it tough at the toll booth, she said, look, Tom, you either work really, really hard now and work hard for the next 15 years. And then hopefully by the age of 50, you might be able to have a bit of a nice life with some money in your pocket, or you don't and you party until you're 30, 25, 30. And then you've got to work the rest of your life to pay off your uni bills and all your bills. I don't know. There's something about that just kind of sat in my head.
Yeah.
But yes. So if I'm not retired by 50, my mum's going to have to pay for it.
That is very, very good advice. for all mums as well, I think.
Yeah.
you mentioned your partner, Rachel. It's, you know, not only is it really difficult for you, but it is really difficult for your, for partners, right?
To definitely.
Those hours without you and, you know, evenings without you, that kind of stuff. How does she sort of get through it?
I don't know, really. No, she's been amazing, and she never complains, actually, to be honest. She might moan at me, but she doesn't really complain. She's never complained about my job or something, but because she knows that's like my passion, you know. Yeah. She always says work's number one and Rachel's number two in my list of jobs or something like that. Which it's quite sad, isn't it? It's not completely true. Yeah. But it's quite sad that, but I always say to her, you're right. And I do feel sorry for her sometimes, but.
Yeah. Well, it's important to have such a, you know, obviously she's so supportive and it's really to have someone who understands hospitality.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't work in the industry, but she understands hospitality. And what she does is that she loves eating in restaurants. So like tomorrow night, we're going to Cole. And I got in touch with them and we're going to have a great time there. So today she's texting me, like, I'm so excited for tomorrow. So yeah. that's where she gets all the goodies come back to her when she gets a glass of champagne.
Well, speaking of Cole, actually, I've been dying to go there. I'm going, I think, in about 2-3 weeks time. Yes. Absolutely can't wait. I've heard.
Yeah, I can't wait.
What are your favourite restaurants in London? Where do you like to dine?
To be honest, nowadays, I kind of like the kind of cheaper places. I love Smoking Goat. I took my mum and dad to Smoking Goat 2 weeks ago, and I didn't think my mum and dad were going to like it, but they absolutely loved it. Yeah, I just like going to kind of the nice places. I don't even know. To be honest, I actually don't eat out as much as I used to anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to not do it. If I have a day off, I'm just trying to, like, maybe go to the gym and then maybe we'll get a takeaway and then kind of chill out. Because I think one point, maybe when we first opened here, before I opened, I was eating out like on all my days off and it just gets a bit too much. It's nice to go out because you get to see stuff, but I'm trying to rein it in a little bit. There's more to life than hospitality. That's what I'm trying to tell myself.
You're trying to tell yourself.
Yeah, it's not working. But
tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
Well, I don't know. I asked Rachel and she said, I don't really have much about me, which was quite a funny response. That was 7 o'clock this morning. I guess I'm a Wolves fan, which not many people know, for being an Essex boy.
Oh, okay.
So everyone laughs at me about that all the time. I don't know. There's not too much, to be honest. I always work. I sound really sad.
Yeah. Do you have any sort of hobbies? Like, what do you like doing outside of work?
During COVID, I was running quite a bit, but since we've been back, I haven't been for a run in about 2 months, so which is bad. So tomorrow, I might try and chip off a bit early straight after lunch, and I was telling myself today, you need to do something. Because we shut Monday, Tuesday, but every Monday, Tuesday, I've actually been doing, like, not private gigs, but yesterday, it was London Restaurant Week, so we did a gig in the restaurant. The weeks before, I've been doing a lot of dinners with Louis Vuitton. So I've just been keeping myself so busy that I haven't had a time to breathe. Right. So I'm quite looking forward to getting away for a weekend and spending some time with Rach and getting back in the good books.
Actually, I did see your Louis Vuitton dinners on Instagram. How did they come about? Is it just like a private dinner for a group of people in there? It looked like an apartment.
Yeah, I suppose it is an apartment. It's like a hotel without rooms. It's their shop on, it's on the Westbury building on New Bond Street. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. I remember when I was at the Westbury, it took them like 3 years to build it. And wow. It's got this beautiful apartment upstairs with a kitchen. And then they just get chefs in who they like to cook dinners for some of their clientele. And it's amazing. It's really good. So good connections.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it was really nice.
Amazing.
I didn't get any freebies there.
Oh, Rachel, you didn't?
Rachel wanted a handbag, but I don't know. I can't afford one of them.
Oh, well, you'll have to, like, I guess making friends in higher places, Tom.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I need to be a bit more tight.
Well, it's been so awesome chatting with you and getting to know you better.
Thank you. Yeah, well, thanks a lot for having me. No, it's great chatting.
And really appreciate your time. And guys, if you want to follow Tom, he's on Instagram at BootinTom. I'm at PoshNoshGal. And if you enjoyed today's interview, please rate, review, and subscribe. It helps others find me.